On today's show, we're going to play some fact or fiction about three different Cavs topics headlined by Donovan Mitchell's blistering hot start. Thanks again for making us your first listen every day. We are free and available wherever you get your podcast. That includes YouTube. Please subscribe to Locked On Cavs over there if you've not already. And today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. That's Bet Online. That's where the game starts.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, the music you heard on the way in is from our friends at Astro. To check them out on Apple Music or Spotify, I'm Chris Manning. I cover the Cavs and NBA large for places like Diamond Up Rocks and SB Nation's Fear the Sword. That man is Evan Damerill. He is the proprietor of Write Down Euclid. He's also at Fear the Sword. This episode, as always, was produced by the one and only Jake Stevens. All right, fact or fiction today on the show. First segment, Donovan Mitchell. Second segment, the Cavs' offense, which is pretty good, the numbers say. And segment three, defensive notes. How good is this defense? Is it, again, one of the league's elite, and how is that happening? But let's start with Donovan Mitchell, Evan. Let's run through his stat line. 32.2 points per game, 7.3 assists, 52.6% on two-pointers, 45.5 on three-pointers. Whew! He's taking, shooting 85.7% from the line so far. I think he's been like a top five or so offensive player to start the year. People are chanting MVP for him at the game. So I'm going to ask this in two ways, because I think we can just say, like, numbers wise, like, him shooting like 45% from three is probably not going to hold the whole season. Like, that would be an insane season for Mitchell if he holds that. That would be just like, holy crap, like, this is all time special season. But is it fact or fiction on the fact that maybe, like, he's really just this good and this impactful for this Cavs team, that maybe he's playing the best basketball of his career right now? Is that fact or fiction to you?
I think it's somewhat factual. I think his shooting numbers will regress back to the mean a little bit. I think a lot of this is a product of Darius Garland being out, and the Cavs just saying, okay, Donovan, we need you to go out there and just essentially put this team on your back, Greg Jennings with a broken leg for 40 minutes a night. And these are just seeing some pretty crazy numbers from him. I think the MVP chance, at least early in the season, you can make a case like, hey, for the first 2 to 3 weeks, he's been the MVP, at least for the Cavs. I know Jason Tatum has been phenomenal this season. Giannis Antetokounmpo has been phenomenal so far this season. But Mitchell, at least, has made a pretty compelling argument that he's a top five player in the Eastern Conference to start the season. And I think he is going to cool off eventually. It's hard to kind of take a full litmus test of where an NBA team currently stands this early in the year. Like, you need to see them probably play until about December, January-ish, when the season starts to become a bit of a grind, injuries start to become more of a factor, and just everything else in between. And maybe we'll see more of what this Cavs team, how they stand, at least when they go on this really long West Coast road trip after their home game against Boston on Wednesday night. But yeah, for now, like, I think he's a top five player offensively right now. We'll see how he looks 10 to 15 games from now, but I'll lean towards fact just because I kind of make this joke as a tongue-in-cheek thing, but the Cavs kind of are reminiscent of the Utah Jazz in terms of just two-way efficiency. But the factor, the difference is that this team actually likes one another versus the Jazz last season. So we'll see the numbers regress, I think, from Mitchell. I think we'll see a definite dip when Darius Garland comes back and they're sharing duties on the ball together or on the floor together on handling the ball. But for now, yeah, I think he's a top five player offensively. But we should probably put a pin in this conversation and talk about it again in 2 to 3 weeks' time.
Yeah, like, maybe after we get to like 30 something games, we could do like a where does he fit in? Like, if he sustains this, like, he would be in the MVP conversation, and like, we can have that discussion then. It's like, my brain will fracture into a bajillion pieces more than it already is if I have to, like, discuss MVP narratives on November 1st. That is a ridiculous thing to do. Not as ridiculous as, like, paying for Twitter verification, but, like, pretty ridiculous.
Folks, did you know that they're going to be turning the checkmark into an emerald? Search Elon Musk emeralds to learn more about it.
Tough luck. So, the thing with Mitchell that I think is, like, I feel very comfortable with, and maybe more so like having watched him up close and seeing him in person more. Like, I mean, we've seen him more in person this year than we've like I've ever seen him like playing with the Jazz, just based on like the games I covered and stuff.
You are like his teammates, because his teammates and coaches have all admitted, like, listen, we're not staying up to watch the Jazz because they're on a different time zone than us.
I don't have like late. I will like sometimes like watch. I will watch a lot of other teams. Like, I just like watching basketball. It just like my viewing habits sometimes are just like I fit in games when I can. And, you know, sometimes you want to just like go to bed because sleep's important. But like he is like just a sensational offensive player. And I think like what the impact we've seen from him on leading the offense the way he has, driving quality 3-point looks for their guys, making them more aggressive, making them more just overall efficient, and like the impact he's had, I think that's just like that's going to be something we see from him. How it changes with Garland will change like how we understand this, and like will he average 32.2 points per game the rest of the year? Like I don't know, but I think like how good he's been is like an indicator that like right now, like this is the best guy in the Cavs. This is the most effective offensive player on the Cavs. He's downright explosive. He's downright just brilliant and clutch and multifaceted and just a freak athlete. And look, I take it seriously when like, you know, Tony Jones, who covered him at The Athletic, like tweeted, this is the best basketball Donovan Mitchell's played in his career. And like,
you're seeing a lot of folks say that the best two-way like, basketball too.
Yeah. And like, he's more like, that's the other part of this. He is more engaged defensively. Like I'm not, he, the metrics, like for whatever they're worth, like don't rate him out as like a positive defender. And I would say that's probably true. Like in the Knicks game in particular, there was a little bit of just him kind of hanging around, which is where you get in trouble with him. But he's been more engaged. He's like just at least playing as part of the overall scheme most of the time. And you mm-hmm. you can take that for how much he's giving you on offense and how much he's providing you. And you'd suspect that that sustains itself when Garland is back and there's a little bit less for him to have to manage and create for everyone else on the offensive end of the floor. So, like, look, it's early. We'll see where this ends up in a year and 2 years and 3 years. But, like, getting Donovan Mitchell seems pretty worth it. Like, just he is just a this is a star player. And, like, we are seeing what a star player can do for your team, even when you have like some suboptimal injuries go your way early in the season.
I mean, he's not even a star player. He's a top 20 player in the league. He's arguably, other than maybe Devin Booker, the best shooting guard in the league overall. Like, just, or James Harden as well, even though James Harden plays more point guard at this point. But Donovan Mitchell is the shot in the arm the Cavs needed. I think I've talked about this with you. I've talked about this with a lot of folks, friends of the program, Danny Cunningham, and so on and so forth. Like, if the Cavs didn't have Donovan Mitchell, they would be scrambling right now to start the season. But instead, they have a guy who is what they kind of always needed, a guy who can just take all the defensive pressure off Darius Garland and then everyone else off the floor as well, because you watch him just bend defenses to his will, and it's fascinating to watch a guy that has so much gravitas on the floor and just kind of pick and pop and choose when he wants to kind of utilize it. And you see his other teammates getting more and more comfortable with him. And it's going to be fun to see when this Cavs team is really fully comfortable with itself. And again, they're not probably going to win the championship this year. I know folks will say like advanced metrics point to the fact that this team is a finals team. I think maybe the Eastern Conference Finals is what the peak of this team is, but again, it's November. I'm not going to entertain this conversation too much, but yeah, it's fun to think that the Cavs have a top 20 player and a guy who's still not even fully in the prime of his career yet and has plenty of mileage left on his legs to kind of keep leveling up with this Cavs team as the other younger players kind of grow into form and become players that are in the same stratosphere as him, or even surpass him if you're looking at how Evan Mobley's trajectory is going.
Yeah. Donovan Mitchell. He's really good, at basketball. He's going to, I think, like how his numbers change, I think will be really interesting in what that kind of looks like when Garland is back. But he's been great. There's no reason to think he's not going to remain really, really good. Okay, after the break, we're going to go to the Cavs offense overall, which is like a top five in the league in offensive efficiency in a couple different spots. And I'll explain that after we get back from the break, and kind of we'll break that down of if that feels real or not. But Evan, you're first going to tell us about our friends at Bet Online.
You're right, my friend. BetOnline.net is your number one source for betting football and the start of the new basketball season. Find all the latest player developments, team matchups, news, podcasts, and in-depth analysis on every game. And as always, BetOnline remains your continued source for all your sports wagering information, with live betting and up-to-the-minute scores for every sport out there. They have the fastest and easiest way to check in all your favorite games and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, golf, and so much more. So if you're interested, head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. As we're recording, there is no line yet on Cavs Celtics, but they'll have one ahead of the game if you're interested. They're also plus 1,200 to win the East right now, and they have the six best odds, to come out of the conference. Bet online, where the game starts.
It was a good slip. I liked it. Okay, after the we're back. I'm fumbling the bag, Evan. Evan's throwing me off my game. Let's talk about the Cavs offense.
Yeah, Evan, locked on Cavs.
Yeah, that's right, baby. I mean, look, we're doing 2 episodes in a night. You're welcome. You're gonna get some shenanigans. Okay. Factor fiction number 2. The Cavs offense is elite. So Evan, right now, dunks and threes has them at with an offensive rating of 116.8. That's adjusted for the quality of opponents' defenses. Cleaning the glass has them 5th at 117.7 per 100 possessions. That is factoring out garbage time. So I say that to you. I tell you, hey, these numbers are these two models, these two different data sets are telling you in different ways this team has a good offense. It's well above league average right now. Does this feel to you like a team that has like a top 5-6 offense?
I mean, they have the potential to be top 5 or 6, but top 10 for sure, just because there are a lot of good and very potent offensive teams out there, of course. But I have said this for a while, the Cavs kind of have that unique ability. I'm writing about this for Write Down Euclid, my last post for Metabulletin for Write Down Euclid, sadly, but it's they have the potential to be balanced because they have a really strong interior threat in Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, and then have a lot of just shooters waiting to fire and Donovan Mitchell, Kevin Love, Dean Wade, Chetty Osmond, even if he doesn't make them. Darius Garland's pretty good too. Like the Cavs had an antiquated style of play last season. Like Chris said, they play very slowly to begin with. I think that's just kind of the nature and the product of their offense with 2 7-footers in your starting lineup. But Donovan Mitchell's just a big enough shot in the arm where he's a guy who naturally attempts 10 3-pointers per game. And you're like looking at this team, like in terms of 3-pointers made, the Cavs are one of the top teams in the league. And they, I believe, are like one of the lowest in overall field 3-pointers attempted per game as well. So like it's an interesting dichotomy the Cavs have and how they work. But I just don't think that's necessarily sustainable because this just, you know, naturally speaking, isn't a team that like is a top 10 shooting team, and like they'll regress a little bit. You're going to see teams surpass them as time goes on, especially if injuries factor in and everything like that. So I'm going to lean fiction on this one and not say top 5 or 6, but they have the potential to be above average and crack into the top 10 offensively. And they're more so going to be leaning on their defense at the end of the day.
So if you look at here's the top 5 offenses, or top 10 offense, as of right now. New Orleans is 1st. Phoenix is 2nd, Dallas is 3rd, Memphis is 4th, Cleveland is 5th, Boston is 6th, 0.1 behind the Cavs on cleaning the glass for what it's worth. Indiana is 7th, Philly is 8th, Portland is 9th, Denver is 10th. Last year, it was Utah, Atlanta, Phoenix, Memphis, Milwaukee, Charlotte, Minnesota, Brooklyn, and Denver. Some of those teams obviously are the same. A lot of them are different. You'd suspect some of these teams, like Milwaukee in particular, to perhaps get back up to being that good offensively again as the year goes on. You'd expect a rebounding from Minnesota. Lord knows what's going on with the Brooklyn Nets. Can't explain anything to you with that shambolic franchise. They should go become the Swamp Dragons again, in my opinion, and just reset the whole thing, honestly.
Or just relegate them, honestly. Trade Kevin Durant and relegate the Nets.
Sioux Falls Skyforce, put him in. Let's go.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Who won the G League championship last year?
Or the Grand Rapids Gold, just because they already like pump out a bunch of former NBA players. But
2021 G League, it was the Rio Grande Valley Vipers.
So the Rockets G League affiliate. So
pull them up. Let's relegate the Nets. Let's go.
Relegate the Nets. They're already a bottom team to begin with. Just pull the trigger on old Yeller and move on here. So. Yeah.
But okay, but back to the report.
Less dark jokes here.
Yes. The Cavs offense, I think, will probably, I would agree with you. I think top 5 is like a little bit high. Garland is, Mitchell is playing so well that I think he's like giving them an edge, and they've gotten like someone real production on the aggregate from LeVert and from Osmond and some of these guys. Mm-hmm. They are 1st in the league in 3-point percentage. They are 4th in percentage at the rim. They take the 10th most threes relative to the overall shot profile. They're 6th most in the mid-range.
That's where I was wrong, is they were 30th the other day. Now, after that game against the net Knicks the other night, they kind of went up quite a bit.
Yeah, they're 6th. They take a ton of mid-range shots. They're 6th most in the league in mid-range clean glass. They're 25th in rim rate. So there are things there, Evan, that I look at and I say, like, you should probably be trying. Like, and if you can get some more looks at the rim, especially with Allen, who, like, I don't think we've seen have as many lob attempts this year. Just hasn't been quite the same for him yet with Garland out. I think that can help you sustain some of this as your shooting falls off. I think, like, cutting back on your mid-range and trying to get to the rim more, draw more fouls, I think, is a way to drive your efficiency up a little bit. Mitchell has just been that good, and I think Garland is going to help that. I think, like, this offense does feel better. I think they're generating good looks for their shooters. I think they're creating relatively kind of things that I think are real as you go on here. I think some guys are playing out of their head somewhat. In some ways, you'd expect them to normalize. I feel like LeVert is probably going to be overall, like, trend towards being a better mid-range shooter than he's been, but also probably regress from three a little bit. Like, that's what I would suspect is going to happen. I think I'm curious to, like, track this, like, the next 20 games with Garland back and kind of see how it looks. Like, that I think will give us maybe the best answer here. But I think this offense is, just by virtue of Mitchell being here, this offense will be better. I think they're going to probably end up somewhere around 8th, 9th, 10th. That feels right to me. And I'm curious to see how the shot profile does change a little bit. I would suspect, Evan, if we go back to, I'm going to pull this up from last year. If I remember correctly, the Cavs were one of the more frequent rim shooting teams, if I'm remembering this correctly. Let's see if my memory is any good. If it's bad, then, like, that's not surprising either. Because the rim stuff is just a way for you to juice efficiency. So last year, the Cavs were 5th in rim rate, 35.6%. Aside from Mitchell and no Garland, there's nothing that has really changed about their personnel that would lead you to think that they're not still going to try to get a ton of shots at the rim. Do that, you cut back on some of the mid-range stuff where they were 20th last year in mid-range rate, I would suspect, like, you just kind of balance out some of the three-point stuff as you go on.
Yeah, it's actually interesting to note. I think some folks probably heard me go, oh, wow, while Chris was talking. I'm looking at the NBA.com stats side of things, and the Cavs are they're in the bottom four ahead of the 76ers, the Raptors, and the Kings in terms of field goal attempts at less than 5 feet from the rim. So probably, you know, at the basket itself. And in last year, they were a top 10 team in that regard, like Chris noted, like, where they really got a lot of their points in the paint. They weren't really a three-point heavy team, where with the inverse, the Cavs are attempting a heck of a lot of threes. And I think that Knicks game certainly skews a lot of things. But yes, I think once you find that happy medium in terms of just field goals attempted, and you find that balance between Garland, Mitchell, Mobley, Allen, and then obviously Love, LeVert, Osman, Okoro, et cetera, so on and so forth. Maybe Ricky Rubio as well once he comes back too. It's going to be an interesting thing. I think it's just kind of trying to figure out the overall just dichotomy of how this team works offensively. I know I use that term a lot, but it's going to be kind of fun to see how this Cavs team works, because I still lean towards fiction. They're not going to be like a top five offensive team just because there's teams with better equipped personnel offensively, but they have the potential to really go places. And then that's a really good foundation to build upon as you continue to level up and maybe become more of a serious contender in the Eastern Conference.
I think if they were to, like, if the shooting was a little more trustworthy, if, like, Osmond was a little more consistent, if Okoro had any pulse in that way, and, like, LeVert kind of was going to be that way, and, like, you also hit the rim stuff more. Like, the template is there for them to maybe get up to that upper echelon, because Mitchell and Garland, I think, could drive a bunch for you, right? But I think, like, the setup of how their roster is leads me to think, okay, it's probably somewhere, like, it's going to definitely be better than last year and end up sort of 10-ish. But, like, that's largely going to be because I think, like, Mitchell and Garland are going to drive so much stuff. And, look, if Evan Mobley, the offense looks sort of improved for him, if that's true, that's also going to kind of juice some of your stats and make you look more efficient. And he might be, he's also, I think, part of the mid-range stuff a little bit there as well. And we'll see how that develops as we go along.
He seems to develop something offensively before he needs to worry about where he's taking shots.
Well, you mean him or Okoro or Mobley?
Okoro. Yeah. Mobley, not as concerned about.
Yeah.
He did give me an interesting answer when I asked him, like, hey, what's a good game for Evan Mobley? We can maybe talk about that in another episode. But yeah, Okoro needs to just get a little bit of some juice offensively before we start saying, like, okay, he good in spots. He just needs to be good somewhere first.
Yeah, just like make a couple of layups, and you'd feel a little bit better. Okay,
make some baseline cuts so Chris Manning shakes me and out of like this the days I've been watching basketball and scares the Jesus out of me.
It's like just a bit at this point. It's just fun for me to do. It brings me joy, Evan. All right, after the break, we're going to come back. We'll talk about how good the Cavs defense has been this year. But thanks again for making us your first listen every day. Now make your second listen, Game to Game NBA. Every moment, every top performance, every result. Locked On Game to Game covers every game from across the NBA with local analysis that only Locked On can deliver. Follow Game to Game on Locked On NBA. It's available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. All right, back here on the Locked On Cavs podcast. I'm Chris Manning. That's Evan Damrell. Okay, so Cavs are currently third in the league, adjusted for the quality of offense they're playing in defensive rating. They're second in the league when you factor out garbage 10 minutes. Evan, what is interesting to me is if you go and look at where they're giving up their shots right now, this is sort of like tells you about their scheme. Right now, they are giving up 36.5% of their shots at the rim. That's a little bit above league average, which makes sense. They're funneling stuff towards Jared Allen. They're funneling stuff towards Evan Mobley. Like you're saying, take shots at the rim. We dare you to do that. In terms of mid-range and how many mid-range shots they're giving up, they are giving up like a pretty good chunk of them. And that also makes sense to me. Like they are saying they're inviting teams in. They're inviting teams to come and attack them in that way. They are currently also allowing teams to take a pretty, like, teams are taking, like, not a ton of threes against them right now. They are taking 30 are taking, like, 30.8% of their shots from three against the Cavs on average. That's about 5 points below the league average of how many threes are taking against certain teams. That's sort of interesting to me. That they're sort of like they really are emphasizing, Evan, funneling things back towards the middle, and like that that was the foundation. I think a lot of the ways last year, it's be competitive on the outside, dare you to come inside and attack them, and if you get threes, that's fine. But it's sort of interesting to note that like, hey, like we're gonna just dare you to take shots at the rim, and well, that's how we're gonna play defense, and that obviously makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, it does make a ton of sense. I think a little bit of like just a drop coverage scheme in general where the Cavs funnel teams in on things that are willing to settle and allow some opponents to take three-pointers. I think just the quality of the offense they face so far in the season is a little tricky to kind of give a full metric of it. So if it's just a fact or fiction question, I think I'll go towards fact a little bit just because you have those two aliens protecting the rim and in the paint in general, and Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, and just more so, at least according to Second Spectrum, like Evan Mobley is the best isolation defender in the league so far this season, which is kind of crazy to think about, but he's defended 10 possessions in isolation so far and only given up one shot, and that was to Pascal Siakam in the home or the season opener rather. And like that's kind of wild to think about that. Like a second year player is just one, and especially a second year player that's a 7-footer, is that comfortable already kind of defending in space and kind of facing a lot of different multifaceted players, whether it was Siakam or Jason Tatum or Julius Randle or Mitchell Robinson at the rim, or just even guys like Jalen Brunson or guards just that he has to defend in isolation for some possessions. Like it's an interesting concept. And I think just where the Cavs stand defensively is just how comfortable and how much Mobley and Allen can handle together, because a lot of their, like you said, core defensive scheme, at least, is to dare teams to attack them at the rim and kind of just force teams to get off of the three-point line by baiting them into attacking the paint or attacking the basket and then just having to run into just a freaking wall, as one Stan Van Gundy would say, you know, different word, not the different F word, if you will, but it's an interesting concept. I think it's working for Cleveland. We'll see how it sustains, but like they were a top five defensive team at the end of the season last year in terms of defensive rating, which, you know, is a skewed metric, of course, but that's their core identity as a team. Like that's where they're most comfortable. That's where they facilitate the most. And I think just having those two who are all defensive caliber players and Allen and defensive player of the year caliber players and Mobley and Allen already, it just gives you a heck of a foundation to build off of.
The other part of their kind of shot profile is that teams, they're giving up in relative to how many shots, percentage of team shots against them, they're giving up the fewest number of non-corner three-pointers in the league. So, like, above the break threes, top of the key threes. Like, teams are taking 21.1% of their shots from the against the Cavs in that position. The league average is 26.8. They're like really that would lead you to think, and I think this kind of based on how they're defending would lead you to think that they are asking team, they're just daring teams to like beat them off the dribble, like saying, "Hey, we're gonna be aggressive, we're gonna make you come this way and deal with it." The other thing that I think they're benefiting from right now, if anything, is that teams are shooting under 30% on non-corner threes. They're shooting only 35% on threes overall right now against the Cavs, and that's a luck-based thing. Like, history has kind of shown with that stuff that teams get a little bit lucky in terms of their shot, of making threes and how good you are giving up. You don't really control your defensive three-point percentage. Like, that's just not really how that historically works. And then on the other side of it, and the weirdest thing to me in some ways, Evan, is that right now in terms of defending at the rim, the teams are shooting 66.7% against the Cavs at the rim. That is, the league average is 64.1%. Like, Philly is the worst team in the league at this right now at almost 71%, which, like, tells you about what's going on with Joel Embiid right now, perhaps. Like, that tells a story there. Like, Toronto is bad in this category. Like, there's some bad teams below this in this category, and, like, New Orleans and Dallas are there as well. So, like, there are some teams that appear to be good in addition to Cleveland, or, like, a team like Philly we expect to be good that are sort of there. But it so far, it has not affected what their defense is. It is still very elite, despite the fact that they're giving up a good amount of, their teams are shooting a lot at the rim, and they're making a pretty decent percentage at the rim. But I'm curious to see, like, if over time, maybe that rim percentage does kind of drop a little bit as this team kind of peaks. And maybe I would also just suspect that, like, the non-corner three stuff maybe gets a little, like, teams start making more of those shots. Like, maybe not like 7-8% or like a crazy bump, but something closer to that league average would make some sense to me. At the same time, I just still expect this defense to be, like, very good. I think it's a fact that I could see this defense absolutely being top five on the strength of those two aliens at the back.
Mm-hmm. No, I absolutely agree. I think I am curious to see just how the back end of this rotation goes to. Does Isaac Okoro get more minutes when Darius Garland comes back, or does he lose them? When Ricky Rubio comes back, how does the rotation plan out a little bit? There are going to be concerns when you're playing all three of Garland, Mitchell, and LeVert together defensively. Like, that's going to get treaded a lot on defense too, or on, yeah, when they're defending as well. And then you're also going to have to, again, ask, are Evan Mobley and Jared Allen comfortable with having to cover for those three times? And we did talk about how Donovan Mitchell is showing some good two-way play, but, like, as you said, he doesn't grade out as a top defensive player just quite, but he at least is trying. You can say the same for anybody on this Cavs roster, but it's still a little too early in the season to fully crown them as, like, a top five defensive team. But I feel more comfortable saying that they could be a top five defensive team at the end of the season versus them being a top five offensive team at the end of the season.
I think that's correct based on sort of what we understand them. And look, they have faced so far three offenses in the bottom 10 of the league and three offenses in the top 12 of the league. So they faced one really good offense in Boston, two teams sort of in that 10 to 12, that 11 and 12 spots, and then three teams that are bad offense, have been bad offensively so far. It's like a good mix of what we're sort of seeing there. I'm curious to see if this shot profile, Evan, sort of remains. If it's like, okay, lots of rim stuff, lots of non-corner threes, decent chunk of corner threes, and lots of mid-range. The mid-range stuff and the rim stuff, like, makes a lot of sense to me. The corner three stuff feels like a thing teams could maybe work to exploit. But, like, you're going to give up shots somewhere. And if, like, maybe there's a logic to that to some degree, right? Like, maybe that's part of the plan. I'll be kind of curious to see how this evolves in what it looks like, particularly, like, once Garland comes back, and you maybe playing slightly different personnel and like, look, like we saw on Sunday against the Knicks, maybe the best example, it's like Jetty Osman's going to offer you some defensive deficiencies. Does that open the door for Okoro certain games just to play 20 minutes and help your defense? And is that a button they hit to kind of pick the defense over the offense functioning and trying to ride out Jetty Osman's ups and downs, right? Like I would suspect what we know about JB Bickerstaff would lead me to think he's going to say, let's play better defense and cut off that, and we'll figure out the offense because we have Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland to figure that out. Like, that's what we pay them lots of money to do. And that's going to lead, I think you're right to say, like, much more likely if I were to, like, if there were, like, odds on this, the defense being top five would be the favorite versus the offense being, like, a top five offense, I think.
Yeah, and I just think just because offensively they have a lot of things they still need to kind of figure out. Like, you're seeing some comfortability between Evan Mobley and Donovan Mitchell. You're seeing him working, or Mitchell working, with a lot of these players. But the Garland-Mitchell question is going to be one the Cavs have to answer, and it's going to take time. It's not going to be perfect. I think the Cavs just repeatedly kind of saying this, and like, it feels like they're screaming in the void at times too, just because expectations sometimes don't match what's actually going to be the production out there. So we'll see what happens. This is definitely an episode I think we should circle back to, though, maybe a couple weeks time, maybe like towards the end of December we'll talk about it and just see like where they're at there, and then we'll just keep continually coming back to at least the second two segments. And also we'll talk about Donovan Mitchell too, because he's just been freaking awesome for the Cavs, and like, he could evolve into an MVP caliber player this season, and that would be a very interesting development for the Cavs if that does happen.
Maybe Evan, we should do this, and every month we'll do like offensive, defensive rating, and some of what this thing we think about some of this.
This has been a good discussion. Like, I think it's an honest discussion. Like, this is what we've seen. This is what the numbers are saying. And as people know, we're more statistically inclined on this show, where we'll kind of break down the evidence and what the eye test is telling us to kind of spit out what this product is going to be. And right now, it looks good. But let's see how it looks when we have a lot more data to extract stuff from.
Yeah, and look, like, it is so early that, like, again, we're still in that phase where, like, one game can really swing some of this stuff. Like, the fact that the Bucks are, like, as bad as they are on offense tells you how early this is. Because that, especially when they get Middleton back, like, this team is not going to, at the end of the year, like, be, like, one of the worst offenses in the league in terms of offensive rating. Like, this is the reality of trying to use this stuff and then match it to what we're seeing and what we think about it. And then also match it up to teams we don't get to watch as much, right? Like, Evan and I primarily watch the Cavs. I try to watch all 30 teams. I have a spreadsheet where I'm tracking, like, the teams that I've watched and how many times I've watched them.
God bless you.
The Lakers are the team I've watched the least because I like myself. So yeah. There's that. But, like, you go through this and it's like you're trying to mix and match and figure stuff out and, you know, rely on the other lockdown pods and other people writing about these teams to figure some of this out. So it's like an ongoing discussion. I'm very curious to see if the shop provides. I did not have enough time, Evan, to look at how this compared to last year. I will do that. And then not on the Celtics recap show, but on the Friday show, I will say I will come back to this and just note how this compared to last year, because I should have done that and I didn't complete my homework in that way. But that is going to end us for today. Thank you for making Locked On Cavs your first listen every day. This episode was produced by Jake Stevens. For your next listen, check out Locked On Sports Today. It's the biggest story of the day, plus instant reactions, big game recaps, and the take of the day. Available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcast. We will be back on Thursday. Cavs Celtics round two recap, our big takeaway, our game awards, and any miscellaneous notes. And maybe that's the return of Darius Garland. We're going to find out. Until next time, I'm Chris. That's Evan. Be well. Stay hydrated.